Translation of the first verse, 37. Moreover, O Lord, the repetition of your appearance is a desire for all kinds of initiation. Your neck is the place for three desires, and your tusks are the result of initiation and the end of all desires. Your tongue is the prior activities of initiation. Your head is the fire without sacrifice as well as the fire of worship. And your living forces are the aggregate of all desires. So I do the translation for the next verse. Okay. Verse 38. O Lord, your semen is the sacrifice called Soma Yajna. Your growth is the ritualistic performances of the morning. Your skin and touch sensations are the seven elements of the Agni Stoma sacrifice. Your bodily joints are symbols of various other sacrifices performed in 12 days. Therefore, you are the object of all sacrifices called Soma and Asoma, and you are bound by yajnas only. Purport now? Yay. Purport. I assume this is by Srila Prabhupada. There are seven kinds of routine yajnas performed by all followers of the Vedic rituals, and they are called Agnistoma, Agyanistoma, Yukta, Sadasi, Vapyena, Atritra, and Aptayama. Anyone performing such yajnas regularly is supposed to be situated with the Lord. But anyone who is in contact with the Supreme Lord by discharging devotional service is understood to have performed all different types of yajnas. Do I do the transliteration or no? I mean, what's your regular standard? Okay. Om Agana Timrandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksura Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. We're born in the darkness of ignorance, but our spiritual masters kindly opening our eyes with a torchlight of knowledge. So we offer our most humble and respectful obeisances unto his lotus feet. Nama Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamani. Namaste Sarasati Devi Gaurabani Pacharine Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Pashtachi Deshtarine. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So these particular verses, like so many of the other ones in the Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita, are very lofty. And sometimes I'm amazed how Srila Prabhupada was able to bring forth this literature in such depth, quoting from so many places. You know, Srila Prabhupada was so learned. And to understand some of these verses, you need to actually have a very deep background. So for me, this particular verse, the purport, Prabhupada said, by anyone who is in contact with the Supreme Lord by discharging devotional service is understood to have performed all different varieties of yajnas. So for me, this was the most important part of the whole thing, because a lot of the details of it, I had not much idea how to connect with it. So in the different yugas, right, there are different sacrifices. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 12.3.52, whatever result was obtained in Satya Yuga by meditating on Vishnu, in Treta Yuga by performing sacrifices, and Dwapara Yuga by serving the lotus feet, can be obtained in Kali Yuga simply by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. And that is us. We are in the Kali Yuga. At the temple, you feel the presence of Krishna very strongly. Like Prabhupada said, the city is the mode of passion, and how the country is the mode of goodness, but the temple is transcendental. It's so apparent. Malati and I have been on an adventure. We've gone to the Juhu Temple. We've gone to a yatra at Govardhan Hill. We went to Jayapur and went to all the temples there, the deities from Vrindavan, Govinda. Every day we were there for about 4 days. And went to Vrindavan and saw Krishna Balaram. It's just you're in one world, and then when you step into the temple atmosphere, you're in a whole different realm. It's such great fortune to live in a spiritual atmosphere and to have such association with spiritually minded people. It's Prabhupada's gift. I mean, he came with nothing and he established, like it said, a home, a house in which everyone could live. And it's so apparent when you travel. Like, I've been in New Vrindavan for so many years, I don't travel. And Prabhupada did say to he called them the inmates of New Vrindavan, that you could stay in New Vrindavan and you don't need to travel because everything is there. He said New Vrindavan is non-different from Vrindavan. So I was happy to hear that, because my traveling days, I think, are over. So I'll probably just stay in New Vrindavan from now on. So in Satya Yuga, they lived for 100,000 years. Meditation was performed. And Prabhupada states in the purport of one of the chapter 11, one of the purports, in this age there are no ritualistic or pious activities such as sacrifice, since everyone is sinless, austere, and fully engaged in worship of the personality of Godhead, Lord Hamsa, through the process of meditation. And he goes on, in Satya Yuga, the people were generally advanced in spiritual knowledge and could meditate upon Krishna. Right? So we just did our adventure into the Soho Temple yesterday. It was so nice. I'd wanted to see those deities, the deities that Prabhupada kidnapped. What a lovely experience. Just so beautiful. And the devotees, they were all like dancing, all these little cute little brahmacharis, you know, back in the day when we were young, it was a lot of brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, and, you know, just the mood was just ecstatic, so peaceful. There was no politics. There was nothing to have politics about. It was simple. You know, we had nothing. We didn't have deities. We didn't even have books. We had Prabhupada's in Hawaii. We had Prabhupada's some of the original Back to Godhead magazines. And Gursindar, he was the temple president. He and Govinda Dasi came over and started the temple in Hawaii in like 69. And we had Prabhupada's original books that he brought over from India, because Gursindar was one of his most scholarly students. So that was basically, you know, what we had. And it was all from square one. Right, Prabhupada, he picked up this band of refugee people and taught them how to eat, taught them how to clean, taught them how to clean themselves, how to brush their teeth with twigs. You know, it was very basic, and we had nothing. This is huge opulence. We had a rented house. We ate whatever we could bag from the markets. But it was so much fun, and there was so, and Prabhupada was so present. You know, we were building, I mean, we didn't know it was going to be like this. I mean, if someone would have told me when I met Srila Prabhupada that this ISKCON would manifest like it has, I would go, no way, you know, no way. But somehow or other, Prabhupada's, and Krishna, I mean, Lord Chaitanya is behind the whole thing. He is spreading Krishna consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada was certainly his ambassador to the world. All right, let's go on here. Treta Yuga, they lived for 10,000 years, offering big sacrifices. Prabhupada mentions that in this yuga, they performed sacrifices for 1,000 years. You know, In the first yuga, I actually wanted to say something about that. Prabhupada said everyone was sinless, austere, and fully engaged in worshiping the Lord. So you go into Soho and you pass by, you know, hundreds of people. Are they all sinless? I don't think so. Are they all engaged in worshiping the Supreme Lord? Are they austere? Absolutely not. Right? The way the world is, the money makers of the world are just throwing tons of media, tons of, you need this, you need that, you should like, your makeup should be like that, you need all these clothes. You know, there's like hundreds of shops. It's like, I remember a class I gave in Hawaii, and it said that people are victimized by the age, right? It's a very difficult time. So yeah, I don't think the meditation would work in this age. So in Treta Yuga, they lived for 10,000 years. The people's occupational duty in Treta Yuga was to perform great sacrifices, which is quite interesting. Dwapara Yuga, they lived for 1,000 years, temple worship. From the Dwapara Yuga in India, this is a quote. In India, so many temple worship flourished. Prabhupada said, not only in India, but all over the world. Church worship is also temple worship. Mosque worship is also temple worship. It may be different for different countries and different classes of people, but the whole thing is temple worship. And he repeats, temple worship. That's in the Bhagavad Gita. There are different kinds of worship. So either this worship or this prayer, they are called temple worship. Temple worship, vandanam, offering prayers, is also a sort of temple worship. So that is recommended. That was recommended in the Dwapara Yuga. And again, Dwapara Yuga means just during the Mahabharata time. Mahabharata time, 5,000 years ago, before that, it was the end of Dwapara Yuga. Then after the battle of Kurukshetra, this Kali Yuga has begun. Kali Yuga, this age, present age, which we are passing on. So I was thinking about Maharaj Yudhisthira, and when he finally got the throne, what did he do? He performed the Rajasuya sacrifice. And I remember reading that his brothers went out, and Arjuna, I guess that's where the winner of wealth comes from. Was that Dhananjaya? The winner of wealth? So he went out and got all this gold from the previous sacrifices that had been performed. And that's how King Yudhisthira was able to accomplish his Rajasuya sacrifice. So in the Madhya Lila, right, there are different yugas, millenniums, and there are different processes. In this age, this is the process. Kalo Sankirtan Hari Kirtan. Simply chanting. Sit down anywhere, everywhere, and go on chanting, chanting, chanting. That was from the Madhya Lila. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, my dear king, although Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, truly an ocean of faults, there is still one good quality about this age. Simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one can become free from material bondage and be promoted to the transcendental kingdom. How fortunate we are, right? What would we have done without Srila Prabhupada coming? I mean, even if we had access to these books, without Prabhupada's purports, we would be totally lost. We would just get right back into material life because it's too difficult. We wouldn't know what to do. If we didn't have our japa beads and a process, that simple process that Prabhupada's given, which is fun, right? That was always my thing for years, it was just so much fun. You'd go on Harinam, you'd make clothes for the deities. I mean, it's beautiful deities. And you're cooking and eating all this wonderful food. I mean, Prabhupada made it, Lord Chaitanya made it so simple for us. What would have happened to us? So Srimad Bhagavatam 12.3.51, my dear king, although Kali... Oh, I did that already. No. Although, my dear king, although Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, there is still one good quality. That's what I just read. Simply by chanting Hare Krishna mantra, one can become free from material bondage and be promoted to transcendental kingdom. Sorry to repeat that. There are six principles favorable to the execution of pure devotional service. One, being enthusiastic. Right? Prabhupada had said that. Even if you don't feel like it, you push yourself to be enthusiastic, right? Because in this age, we're so prone to the mode of ignorance, right? We want to sleep, we want to take it easy, we want to chill, right? But it's not really good. It's not progressive in devotional service. And I was thinking that Srila Prabhupada was always enthusiastic. And look at the age he came at. I mean, anyone who's 70 or older can really get a good glimpse into what Prabhupada was able to do at his age. Just, it's, you know, he was so empowered. He was enthusiastic to push on Krishna consciousness. He crossed over the ocean. I mean, we flew for 10 hours from Mumbai, and that was like almost too much for me. But to cross over the ocean on a cargo ship, not even like a fancy luxury liner where you can have some cool things to look at or something, you know, a cargo ship. Just, but he Prabhupada never stopped. He pushed and he pushed and he pushed. He had that enthusiasm to really open up the doors of the Harinam and the, what is that? The Namhata, the marketplace of the holy name, right? He knew what was there. And even though I know it was a struggle for him, he just had the enthusiasm to be able to keep on going and push hundreds of young people to make some progress in their life. All right, the second quality, the second principle, endeavoring with confidence. Who could have been more confident than Srila Prabhupada? Who would ever challenge Srila Prabhupada? Who could challenge Srila Prabhupada? He had such confidence and such knowledge that he was undefeatable as far as I'm concerned. He could argue with anyone, any yogi, any Mayavadi, any impersonalist, he could argue with anyone and win because he had so much confidence and so much knowledge. It's quite amazing to be around him. Being patient, he was patient. Srila Prabhupada was super patient. Can you imagine dealing with people of such a caliber? I mean, really. Srila Prabhupada was from an aristocratic family. I mean, his mother was so chaste that she didn't go out of the house to a neighbor's house without going in a palanquin. I mean, these ages were so different. And here, and he's so knowledgeable and so pure, never eaten meat, never taken intoxication, never done all the nonsense that we do. And he's come and he's dealing with a group of young people that had no idea what was right or what was wrong. Anything was right. Do anything. If it feels good, do it. That was like the motto of the young people of that age. So Srila Prabhupada was so patient, like spoon feeding a child, you know, do it like this, wash your hands. We hear the story of Jamuna helping Prabhupada with a feast for her sister, Janaki. Can I drink water? She said, wash your hands. Can I do this? Wash your hands. You know, it's like spoon feeding a child. He was so patient. And it wasn't like, just go wash your hands. He was just like the most loving father, you know, teaching, lifting, uplifting these young people. And look at the result. I mean, look at what Jamuna did. Amazing. She wrote a cookbook that it won the top accolades of all the cookbooks in the world, or the country, I don't know which one. I mean, he just built these devotees. The fourth one, acting according to regulated principles, such as Sravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, hearing, chanting, remembering about Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada, he established all of this, right? He established his own regulated principles. Like he says in some of the scriptures of the world, one of the rules is don't have sex with your mother, because that's where the people were at. So Prabhupada started with no illicit sex life, no intoxication, no gambling, and no meat eating. And for some people in certain countries, that's a norm, but not to the people Prabhupada started with. You know, it's like, okay, you're living together, so why don't you get married? And he'd perform the wedding. Stop eating meat. You know, it's like, oh, stop eating meat. What a new thing. And no intoxication. He was talking to people that were constantly taking intoxication. So abandoning the association of non-devotees. So Prabhupada, to help us get out of the association of non-devotees, he established ISKCON. Right? ISKCON is just a perfect refuge. You can find all kinds of friends, your family, if you grow up within ISKCON. My children, I've got three sons. One lives in Saranagati. He's married to one of the children of another Prabhupada disciple, and they make up most of Saranagati, actually, their whole family. And my second son is in L.A., with my granddaughter, and my third son lives in New Vrindavan. So because they've been born into this movement and had a good background, they've stayed, maybe not as brahmacharis, you know, going on Harinam every day, but they've stayed with the principles of Krishna consciousness, at least knowing what should be done. So the last one is following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. Right? Prabhupada was constantly, I mean, it's actually amazing that he established a deity worship, right? We didn't have deity worship when we started. We have a picture of Gornitai. And there was no rules, you know. Okay, just offer the incense like that, and you offer a flower, and okay, that's it. That was our standard. No prayers. There was just a few prayers. But he established, like, he kidnapped the deities at Soho, right? And that started the deity worship. In Hawaii, we made the first Gornitai deities. We made them out of paper mache. You know, very simple. We started the first tulsi plants. Govinda Dasi started the first tulsi plants. He built this organization piece by piece, following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas who did have deity worship, Rupa Goswami, Sanat Goswami. You know, the temples, the great temples that we go to in Jayapur and in Vrindavan were established during the time of the Goswamis. But he was able to establish these beautiful temples all over the world and established a certain standard of deity worship, right? He took the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and he summarized it. But even just the summary, if you really study it, it's like, wow, who could do all these things? And he said, if you actually knew the standard of deity worship, you would faint. So we have our deity worship ministry in New Vrindavan. We just had a week-long deity ministry class, seminar, that taught all these different things of deity worship. So Prabhupada was always following in the footsteps, but also established, he had his own take on things. So we follow what Prabhupada established because he took everything that he knew and put it into a certain package, and that's our ISKCON. And at the end of this, Prabhupada says, these six principles undoubtedly assure the complete success of pure devotional service. Oh, I'm sorry. What time does the class end? 8:30. Okay. So Vishakha asked me to relate a little of my story with Srila Prabhupada. I'm from Hawaii. Oh. Jai. Oh, glories. Such a beautiful darshan. Do I go on with the class? Okay. All right. Very nice. It's like drinking nectar through your eyes. So I'm from Hawaii. I'm from a semi-well-to-do family. Never lacked for anything. Drove a sports car when I was 15. Had a new Cadillac every year. My father was a big businessman in Hawaii. Krishna put me in the right place, a very nice, pious man. But at a certain age, like when I was in my later teens, I started looking for God. So I went on a quest that took me hither and thither, as they say, and took me to San Francisco and then back to Hawaii. And I realized later that a lot of the devotees that I knew later in life had been young people that I had grown up with or associated with at part of my life. So I was living in the North Shore, and I was really, I had already followed all the principles. There was no Krishna consciousness in Hawaii. Krishna had directed me from within, right? I had already given up eating meat, no illicit sex life, no intoxication, no gambling anyway. And I started getting very serious, and I lived with this older woman. I rented a room. So I would read all these different books. I'd try and meditate. I don't know what I was meditating on. Who knows? I was reading Buddha's teaching, Jesus' teaching. I was reading in personal Bhagavad Gita that was telling me that I was God, which was a little hard to figure out. So I was becoming very confused. And one day, the lady who I was living with, her son sent a little poster in the mail, right? So she opened it up, and there was a blue boy sitting on a rock with a cow and a deer, and it was from her son. And he said, dear mom, I've been just initiated. My name is Muni Bunda. Chant Hare Krishna. And we went, interesting, a blue boy. So I was getting bewildered. And so I lay down in my room and I prayed, my dear Lord, if you're here, please send me to someone who knows you. So then, like a week later, I got an urge for an almond cookie. Now, I wasn't eating sugar. No sugar. The mucusless diet healing system, that was my diet. But I had a friend who had a car, and I said, please take me to the bakery. I have to have an almond cookie, even though it was against my rules at the time. So he picked me up and took me to the bakery. It was a small bakery, about the size of your bakery. This is the North Shore in Hawaii. And on the window was a little poster, and it had a man in a graveyard. And there was ghosts flying around, and the man was contemplating life. And on the bottom it said, chant while you can. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. I said, oh. And then it said, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, and it gave an address. Now, keep in mind, there was no Hare Krishna in Hawaii at the time. So I told my friend, with my certain demeanor, take me there. I want to go. So he took me to this house, old Hawaiian house up on the hill. Very simple, rustic, dirt driveway. There was a little pasture with some cows and a windmill. And so we drove up the driveway. I still had my almond cookie. We got to the top of the driveway, and I started feeling apprehensive, like afraid. But not scary afraid, just apprehensive. So I turned around and looked up, and there was an older gentleman at the top of the stairs telling us to come up. So we went up the stairs. I had my bottle of apple juice, and Prabhupada was there. I don't know how he knew we had come. There was no one else there. It was the first time they'd ever left him alone. And he took us, there was one room that had all this saffron cloth hanging, and then we went through the temple room, which was just a very plain room. It had a wire across and some sheet over it as a curtain. And as we entered Prabhupada's room, there was a Brijbasi print of Arjuna and Krishna, and Arjuna's surrendering to Krishna, and it was thumbtacked on the wall. And Prabhupada went in his room, and he sat down behind a desk, which was not like the desks we see nowadays. It was a piece of raw plywood with some bricks underneath it. But he was an effulgent person, which I had never experienced. And it's not like I had heard about Prabhupada, knew who he was, knew nothing about Hare Krishna. There was no Hare Krishna in Hawaii. But he was an effulgent person. He was extremely gracious. He was like meeting your best friend that you'd been looking for your whole life. And I knew he was the person I had just prayed for, someone who knew God. And by Prabhupada's personal association, you were actually put into the association with the Lord. You were put in a different realm. And Prabhupada, I had all these questions, right? When you get into spiritual life, you not only get answers, you have more questions. Well, what about this? And what about that? And what about that? So I had all these questions because I had been endeavoring to try and understand. Knock and the door will be open, right? Seek and ye shall find. So I had all these questions. And Srila Prabhupada started talking. And I didn't ask him anything, but I could see him looking into my mind and into my heart. And I could see that he was just like Jesus, that he had a certain love for me that was unparalleled in this world. It was not the love of someone who wanted something from me, expected something from me. It was on a whole different level. So he started talking to me about God. And in the course of his conversation, he answered all of my questions. And I didn't ask him anything. So to me, it was exactly what I had prayed for. To me, it was a miracle that Krishna had scooped me up and just put me in the presence of Srila Prabhupada. And I was so amazed, actually. And then the devotees came back. They'd been on Harinam. They were surprised to find somebody there. And they brought Srila Prabhupada in some sugar cane, right? Cut sugar cane. Now, I was not eating sugar. But when Prabhupada finished his talk, he offered me sugar cane. And I said, no, thank you, I don't eat sugar. So Srila Prabhupada, he picked up the sugar cane, he put it in his mouth, and he said, oh, in India, we eat sugar. And he started chewing the sugar cane. But when Prabhupada said anything, it was like volumes of knowledge. Like when Prabhupada talked about Krishna, when Prabhupada said anything, it's like these volumes of knowledge went through you. It wasn't ordinary. And so I got the realization, oh yeah, it's just sugar. It just grows in the field. What's wrong with sugar? So when I left the room that day, the sugar cane was on the side of the door. And so I'm going to have some sugar. So I picked up the sugar and I chewed it, but it was already chewed, which was probably good for me. So I think I need to stop class. There's 5 minutes before I'm supposed to stop. So anyway, my apologies for my simple narration. It's my style. So if anyone has any questions or anything, please feel free. Yes? Yes? Please? Very simple and down to earth.
It was really, really nice. So my question is, I have some friends, quite few friends, which were, they came in contact with Prabhupada, with devotees, and they stay even, they practice, and they left, they became Christians. So do you have an idea why this is happening? And it's not with one or two. I know some more.
Well, I've thought about that also. And for myself, I have a Christian background. And I was just thinking yesterday when we were traveling through the city and I saw this big church. It's like home to me because it's from my youth. You know, I went to the Catholic Church forever. And I think our philosophy, a lot of the things in the Bhagavatam are very lofty and very unordinary. And I think for people to go that way, it's a simpler concept. There's no requirement, there's no regulated principles. You can do whatever you want. You can drink if you want. You can do whatever you want. You can eat whatever you want. It's not like for us, we're traveling or we're, okay, I'm hungry, what can I eat? Oh, I can't go there, I can't go there, I can't go there. I should eat food offered by devotees. It becomes a burden for some people. That's what I would say. So to go back to their Christian roots, they've certainly gained a lot from being in Krishna consciousness. But their life is more simple if they go that way. To me, it's kind of like going backward. Not that the teachings are wrong or anything. It's just that, like Prabhupada talked about the Bible and the Vedas. And one is like the dictionary in an elementary school, and one is like the dictionary in a college. I mean, the Vedas are very vast and way beyond me. I mean, like the verse that I had, it was like, oh, what on earth does that mean? You know, I listened to a few classes given by other devotees, some Maharajas, and, you know, I just can't grasp it. So if you don't have to grasp anything, if you can just go to church, give some tithing, say some prayers, and then go home and do whatever you want, it's much easier than all the regulations that we have. That's what I would say.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Yes. Hare Krishna, thank you so much for the class. You said in the beginning that one of the principles is to push ourselves to be enthusiastic even when we don't feel like it. And I'm wondering, how does one do that?
Well, I mean, if you have a service to do and you don't feel like doing it, you just become enthusiastic and do it. It's just like when Gurudas was telling Srila Prabhupada, he told everyone to bow down. Gurudas said, I don't feel like bowing down. He said, Prabhupada said, you just bow down and then you'll get to the point where you feel like bowing down, where you have that surrender and attitude. I mean, Krishna consciousness is very simple and it's very easy, but at the same time, it's very difficult, you know, and not everyone is going to live in the temple and do 24 hours of service. You know, it's just not like all the devotees that met Srila Prabhupada and got initiated, not all of them are traveling like, you know, like Malati or some of the other devotees. Some of them live away from the temples. They go maybe for Janmashtami in their home. They have, you know, maybe Prabhupada's books. And I'm sure some of them don't even do that. You know, it's not that it's easy, but at the same time, it's simple. I mean, we push ourselves for anything else. If we have a, of course, I don't know anything about going to concerts, but if you have a ticket for a concert at some rock band and you don't feel well, you're going to push yourself to go. You've got the ticket. Okay, yay, I know it's going to be good. You know, although it may not be. Pretty drastic place to go. Please.
They say the best time to chant is when you don't want to chant. Because it's not necessarily the quality necessary. It's the determination to carry on. It's something that we have to get over. You've got to develop a muscle, isn't it? And chanting is definitely... A way of chanting is a muscle. Sometimes when I'm in pain, I chant and it drifts away because you've got to focus on something else rather than your body. And so it's a remedy as well for the pain you feel. Okay.
I mean, what else would we be doing with our life? There's not much great things happening in this world. Although, I mean, you see a lot of the devotees that have normal lives, but still are strict devotees. They're professors at universities, they're scientists, they're, you know. Back in the original days, we all just did things at the temple, but we were growing the movement. All right, I think, oops, do I have time for another question? Comment, thank you. Microphone is there.
Yeah, I just wanted to add also, for myself, I find that reading makes me enthusiastic because we hear about, you know, if you do devotional service, you get so much benefit, and the Bhagavatam describes the benefit devotees obtain by, you know, doing devotional service, and also by reading like Prabhupada Lilamrita, hearing stories about how the devotees, you know, they perform devotional service, and yeah, they had such a wonderful change in their lives. So then, we feel inspired to also do the same, so we can also get the same benefit in our life. Yeah, listening to stories like the one you just shared, right? Somebody put that poster in that bakery so that you found it and then you could come and meet Srila Prabhupada. So, you know, being enthusiastic, putting posters here and there, you know, these things, by hearing these stories, we become enthusiastic to also do these things. That's what I find.
Well, I know for me, meeting Srila Prabhupada gave me a mission, right? People are hopeless. Well, what am I here for? You know, I'm trying to be happy. I'm going to a con. I'm taking drugs. I'm having sex with all these people. I'm eating whatever, but I'm miserable. You know. But Prabhupada gave a mission. Okay, you're miserable. That's granted. But do this, and you'll make progress in your life. Right? Not only for this life, but we know death is coming. It's not a nice thing to think about. No one likes to think about it, but we know it's coming. So where are we going? So we're making our future also. It's a certain reassurance that we're going in the right direction. For me, it was a really big thing to have a mission. Prabhupada was on a mission. Lord Chaitanya, it was a mission, God's mission, to propagate things that pick up the world. The world is in a hellish situation. So much bad karma. So much motive ignorance. I'm on the plane. We're coming here. And they have all these movies, right? like hellish movies. I mean, for me, hellish. You know, these monsters and violence and sex, and it's like, oh, what a horrible taste. You know, and it's like the common thing. It's just a nasty world. But, you know, this is such a peaceful lifestyle. So no matter how much we pick it up, we're benefited. And then our future, you know, who wants to think that they're going to take birth in a hellish place, you know, with in poverty or where there's bombs going off or in a lower planet? You know, that's a little scary. At least for me it is. Anyway, I have to thank Srila Prabhupada for bringing us and for Lord Chaitanya for giving us an opportunity to get out of the lower life that we've gotten into. So thank you for your association and your service. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.